This is Rod C. Davis, and I'm with John Nowinski and Diane Bayarinas at the Ramada Inn in Stratford, Connecticut. John is the founder and director of Smoking Gun Research Agency, and Diane is assistant director. The SGRA Paracon 2005 just wound up, and based upon what I saw, it was a huge success, and the best one yet. Am I right, John?
Yes, it was the most well-attended and basically the best one we've had in the 7 years.
Terrific. The organization has been around for 7 years. I wasn't aware of that.
Yep.
I was thinking more like five, but that's cool. I'm very much in favor of what your organization is all about. What motivated you to establish the Smoking Gun Research Agency?
Well, what motivated me was my personal experiences with the paranormal, and just the fact that as I started to share them with other people, I found out that so many other people had other experiences themselves and also questions, and there wasn't very many places to find answers. So we formed the SGRA as a spot to find answers for the questions.
Okie doke. You focused a lot of your time and energy on Montauk, which is located on Long Island, New York. And if I'm not mistaken, it's where the famed Montauk Project took place. Is that what drew your attention to it?
That's not what drew my attention to the paranormal in general. I actually had a UFO sighting in the 1980s that was part of the Hudson Valley sighting.
Mm-hmm.
That happened here in Connecticut and New York. And that was what originally sparked my interest in the paranormal.
Okie doke. Did you know Diane, or did you and Diane know each other before you established the SGRA?
No, actually the SGRA had been established for about 3 years before we met Diane.
Mm-hmm.
And she came on as an original field agent and then just got quickly wrapped up in all the administrative work that goes into the agency. And in October of 2002, our assistant director had to step down due to time constraints, and Diane stepped up to take up the position and help us out.
Diane's been doing a good job from what I've seen. Diane, you're the agent in charge of the ghost division. Tell me, what do you do on a typical ghost hunt?
Well, on a ghost investigation...
Oh, an investigation. You took away all my fun.
Well, a ghost hunt makes it sound like Ghostbusters.
Okay.
An investigation sounds more like what you're doing,
uh-huh.
which is going into a situation or an area and setting up scientific equipment to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So on a typical investigation, we come in with a group of maybe 4 to 6 people, depending.
Why so large?
Well, it depends on the situation and where we are. We don't go any larger than 6.
Mm-hmm.
If we have enough, we can divide up into 2 separate groups so we can go into separate areas,
mm-hmm.
and get impressions separately,
mm-hmm.
and then compare notes.
Do you ever go individually?
Yeah, is it one person going on an
yes.
investigation?
Mm-hmm.
No.
And why is that?
Well, for a lot of reasons. Number one for me is safety.
Mm-hmm.
Being a woman, I don't want to go into a situation where I'm going to be alone someplace, especially if it's a night investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, if you have more than one person there witnessing the same event,
mm-hmm.
it adds the credibility to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. And in your investigations, have you ever happened upon a demon infestation?
Not so much a demon infestation. I happened into something that I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to say it's a demon.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just... I've encountered what was a human spirit, what is a human spirit,
mm-hmm.
and this thing I encountered up in Massachusetts was not it. There was just this awful smell involved with it, and this fear that overtook me. I'm not afraid of going on any investigation. You can ask John. I'm right there.
Mm-hmm.
But this to this day, I have not gone back because it scared me so much. I don't know what it was,
mm-hmm.
but that was my only even brush with anything remotely like that.
Okay.
And I didn't do an investigation, so I can't say it's demonic. I don't know what it was.
Sure. Well, based on what I know, you hit on two ingredients that point to the fact that it could have been demonic.
Oh, yeah. I'm not ruling it out. Mm-hmm. I just... One thing with our group is we do not say conclusively that something, a place is haunted, or if it's a spirit, or if it's demonic, or whatever it is, unless we have actual proof.
Mm-hmm.
And this we don't have proof on, anything
right.
on.
Okay. John, has there been any UFO sightings in Connecticut itself?
Oh, sure. We actually had a major UFO sighting in 1999 that happened over Stamford, Connecticut, which is just about 10 to 15 miles from Westport, in which lights were seen in the sky, and it was actually followed by an extremely loud, almost what was described as a sonic boom that really shook the whole downtown area. And we were able to witness, we were able to interview witnesses, first responders, police officers who were actually outside when this happened. And there were actually transcripts of police officers having basically chased lights up into the back areas of Stamford. And this was a major sighting, and we actually ended up being able to get it published in the Stamford newspaper. And after that happened, we got many more reports in.
How low did this object come down?
This object came down quite low. There were some people that saw it over the treetop levels. What really intrigued us was that many of the sightings happened right over the city. So people who, you know, are normally in areas where there's not low-flying aircraft because of the city, were actually seeing this low-flying aircraft, and they knew that it wasn't a regular airplane. So they were able to identify with the fact that it wasn't just a normal airplane flying over, because the city there doesn't get airplanes flying over that way.
Did anybody get close enough look at it that they could give a description of the object?
Actually, what really intrigued us about this sighting was that the object seemed to vary in description. Some people who saw it claimed that it was a delta wing-shaped aircraft. Other people saw it as a circular aircraft. And that day, as well as the following day, there were actually sightings up and down the coast of Connecticut of different lights in the skies in different shapes.
Well, there's no mistaking a delta wing and a circular. Does that indicate to you that there could have been more than one?
Well, to us, that indicates there could have been more than one. There's also been numerous UFO reports in all over the United States and all over the world, for that matter, where witnesses have actually said that, they saw the shape of the craft actually changing before their eyes. Which is a possibility as well. There were no videotapes or photographs taken of this craft, so unfortunately we don't have any physical something to look at like that. However, it was very interesting in the fact that it just matched up with many of what the witnesses saw at specific times. For example, many witnesses who sighted a circular aircraft sighted it in a certain block of time, whereas those who sighted a delta wing aircraft sighted that in a particular block of time. So it could have been that there were actually multiple craft.
Diane, let me ask you a question. In your ghost investigations, what is the most recent, and what prompted it?
The most recent is here in Connecticut, in Redding, Connecticut. And what prompted it was actually a picture, I believe, that you got, John, from a wedding. And we contacted the people and found out a little of the history that, they do happen to have a ghost there. They do have a lot of activity. The group of us went in, and we got some interesting photographs and a couple of EVPs that we're looking at.
Explain to the listening audience what you mean by an EVP.
That's electronic voice phenomenon.
Okay.
That's when you ask questions into a tape recorder, leaving a space afterwards, and you sometimes get voices or sounds afterwards that you don't hear while you're taping. You only hear it when you play it back.
And do you play it back at a different speed or the same speed?
usually you just play it back at the normal speed.
Mm-hmm.
You can also play it back backwards and sometimes get some strange results. The human voice, if you play the human voice backwards, you get garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you hear a dog bark, you play the dog bark backwards,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like a dog bark.
Mm-hmm.
The human voice does not do that. The human voice sounds like garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you play something that sounds like a human voice backwards and you get another human voice, you know you've got something on there.
That's interesting. During the conference, there was one person that talked about EVP and the fact that when they played it back, when they played it forward, they got one message, and when they reversed that exact same section of tape, they got a totally different message.
Right.
That's imagine being able to do that. I mean, being the being or the entity that is able to do that. That's cool.
That is neat. The other common misconception about EVPs, which Diane actually mentioned there too, is that a lot of people think electronic voice phenomena needs to be voice only.
Mm-hmm.
But what we discovered actually in investigation and on subsequent investigations before that too, is that EVP can be sound as well. You can hear a sound from a location,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily just a voice.
Yeah, there's
For example, what we discovered, one of the EVPs that we got at the stand was that we got, and one was simply like a sound, almost like a bang, at a particular time when there just wasn't any type of that noise around. The other sound we got was the sound of someone as if they were humming a tune, just a couple bars of a tune. So that's just an idea that EVP doesn't necessarily have to be a voice or something.
Right.
It can also be the sound.
When you were doing that investigation, Diane, and you got the EVP, did you get anything on camera also?
I got a couple of pictures that had some anomalies in them, some orbs and such. I have one of their wine cellar, which does not have a light in it.
Mm-hmm.
The picture before it is fine. The picture the second picture has a looks like a reflection, but there would be nothing to have a reflection on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really strange.
I understand that there's some type of a computer program that one can, especially on digital pictures, can apply to the picture to find out if it's an anomaly or if you actually caught something.
John, that's more techless, and that's more your kind of thing.
There's a number of programs that can be used to analyze photographs. We use standard Photoshop program, which allows you to alter some picture a little bit. And when you alter the picture, for example, the contrast or whatnot, you can pick out areas of the film that might be a problem that occurs in the film, or might be a problem that occurred in the original printing.
And what do you look for when you're doing that?
Well, you look for a number of things. For example, a lot of times in developing a film, there might be scratches that come out, which when you first look at it on a picture may look quite interesting, but with tweaking different things within the picture when you scan it into the computer, many times you can realize that it's just a problem within the printing or within the film itself.
Right. But what about with a digital exposure?
With the digital exposure, it actually works pretty much the same way. A good example is we had a woman who sent us a photograph that she took at a birthday party that appeared to show an orb next to a number of the people that were at the birthday party. And it was very intriguing. It looked very much like an orb. When we worked on the picture a little bit, it was definitely something that was in the photograph. It wasn't a problem with the printing or whatnot. And it actually took us a little while to basically try to figure out what this anomaly on the photograph was, and it turns out that it was a candle.
It turned out to be a candle?
Exactly, mm-hmm. that the woman had forgotten. She had there, it was a very small tea-light candle.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was you had this amazing-looking orb, but because of the way the picture was taken with the digital camera, you couldn't actually see any part of the candle there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turned out that it was simply a candle.
So the candle was actually in front of you, the camera, not in back of it. Or
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But what happened was that on the digital camera, it came out looking as an orb, and you didn't actually see any physical object within that.
Mm-hmm.
We've also had instances where we've gotten photographs of apparitions, and we've been able to look on the computer, and we've been able to work a little bit with the computer there and discover that it's not something like a lens flare or something like light coming in from a different area.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that by simply, you can do it quite simply by lightening and darkening the background of the picture a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Which allows you to see where in the picture there's more light coming in from and where there's less light coming in from.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some simple ways to do it. There's also much more complex ways that involve much more learning on the Photoshop programs or various other photo programs that you use.
I'll have to email to you two photos that I took when I interviewed a lay religious demonologist. When I took the photo of him, I had him stand in two different locations. I got something that looked like an anomaly that looked like two eyes on his chest on the first one. And the second one, there was one eye, the apparition that looked like an eye, and then it looked like the other eye was in a movement going to a different location. Kind of interesting, but I'll email those to you, and I'd love some feedback to see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, we'd be happy to check them out.
Pardon?
We'd be happy to check them out.
We Terrific.
Do that with a lot of people. We have a lot of people who email us photographs that they just, want to know basically if there's a problem with the film or if it's something a little bit more than that. We
right.
always try to get back to them as soon as we can.
That was an interesting interview that I conducted. At noontime that day, I started getting a very nervous type of a feeling, and I don't get those. And it continued throughout the entire day, and it exacerbated when I was actually with the lay religious demonologist and his backup support crew. And then when I left them, it was totally gone. Kind of an interesting phenomenon, I thought. Diane, is there any particular ghost investigation that kind of raised the hair on your neck?
Well, there are some that made me really think twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lake in Fairfield, Connecticut that is very active. And now they get the orbs on the photograph. Well, this place, I actually saw orbs with my eyes, bare eyes.
Mm-hmm.
With no actual, camera in front of me or anything.
Mm-hmm. There was clicking in the background. It kind of got distracted. But you were saying you did catch something on a film?
I don't know if anyone caught anything on the film.
Okay.
My camera stopped working.
We did get things from that location on the film. I don't recall if it was that day or not, but we did get a couple things actually on digital film that were very interesting and that we haven't been able to explain yet.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing with me was what happened with my camera. Now, this was a $300 camera,
mm-hmm.
a 35 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I lifted it up to take a picture. Now, I was in the front of the group, and there was no one standing in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something go across my viewfinder as I went to take a picture, tried to click the shutter, and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
The battery was not dead because the flash would go off. But the shutter would not go.
And did it work after that?
Well, it started doing where I click once and the shutter would open,
mm-hmm.
and click again and it would close. I finally took it to a camera shop, and the shutter was stuck. But it didn't. Never happened before. Mm-hmm. Haven't happened since.
An interesting phenomenon. John, you had quite a few speakers at the Paracon. And as I understand, you made a video recording of each of the speakers?
Yep, we sure did.
And if anybody is interested, would you just give a highlight of who the speakers were and what they talked about so that the listening audience, if they're interested, can log onto your website and order the DVD from you?
Sure. The speakers are still actually listed on our website as well, with a little bit of biography. But we had John Zaffis, who is a world-renowned demonologist and paranormal investigator. And he spoke about many of the items that he's come across in his investigation.
Mm-hmm.
We had Jeff Berlinger, who is actually the founder of GhostVillage.com, which is the largest online ghost community for conversation and discussion boards. We had yourself, who was there.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Susan Bove, who spoke about electronic voice phenomena. And we had Stacey Jones, who is the founder of Central New York Ghost Hunters Society, who spoke about her investigations. And we also had Nick Rustler, who is our agent in charge of UFO investigations for the FCRA.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke about abductions and generational abductions throughout the
basically
throughout family.
And it's the Paracon event has done really well. I guess what I'm trying to ask is, when do you think these DVDs would be available to the general public?
The DVDs or videotapes will be available by the end of the month.
Okay.
By the end of July, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely within the next week or so.
Okay.
Right now we're working on just running them off and getting enough copies so that we can start distributing them.
Mm-hmm.
But people can definitely be checking the website, which is www.sgra-media.com. And they can check the website within the next week or so to find out about pre-ordering and ordering of the DVDs or VHS tapes.
And I noticed that you have a membership and that there's a discount for those that are members and those who are not members.
Yep.
What is the fee for a person to become a member of SGRA?
There's no actual fee for participation in the organization because we've never believed in putting a price on participation. However, people can subscribe to our printed newsletter, which is $12 for 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when you subscribe to the newsletter, you also have access to special subscriber-only discounts, which are available on the DVDs and some other products that we put out, CDs and whatnot. And the newsletter can actually be subscribed to in a printed edition, which is sent out in the mail, or you can actually get it in electronic format, which is sent just straight through email in a PDF format.
And I can tell you that I've read each and every one of your letters, and they are very informative. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I want to know if, John, if you have any parting comments for our listening audience, and also, Diane, I would like the same from you. Why don't you go first?
Well,
nothing like being on the spot, eh?
Yeah, right. I guess check out the website. We have a lot to offer on it. And I want to thank you for a great interview.
My pleasure. And one other thing, too, if anybody encounters something of the ghostly nature and they'd like somebody to investigate it, do you have chapters elsewhere other than Connecticut, or is Connecticut the only place?
Oh, no, we have chapters. John, you're going to have to help me out because I'm not going to remember all of them. New Hampshire.
We have chapters in New Hampshire. Connecticut's obviously our main one. We also have chapters in South Carolina, Wisconsin, and we also have people who work with us throughout the United States, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, Nevada, California, also Tennessee, Kentucky, basically all over. So if we don't actually have a chapter in an area where you are, we definitely have experts and professionals that we work with that we can refer you to.
Okay, terrific. And John, do you have any parting comments?
My parting comments are pretty much the same as Diane's. We invite everybody to visit the website. We have a great message board on the website where we get debates and discussions going that last months sometimes. And we also are now having chats twice a week on our website, online chats on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights starting at 9 o'clock Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can come into the chats. They're easy to get into. They're easy to learn. And it's a great way just to meet people from all over the place to share an interest.
Terrific. You also are you still on regularly the ASPR, is that radio?
Yep, we're still regularly on ASPR. We haven't been on it since the conference, but that'll be changing soon.
Mm-hmm.
And also, our newsletter is, again, available for subscription, and it's actually going to be growing again. Right now, it's about 12 pages each month that gets put out, and we're expecting an increase in the page size, so it's probably going to become about 15 pages each month now.
Outstanding.
So it'll be much more information, much more reading, and a lot of regular columns are going to start appearing.
Terrific.
So there will be some expert advice in the newsletters for getting out and doing your own investigating as well.
Outstanding. If you have any questions for John and or Diane, you can reach them through the Smoking Gun website, www.sgra-media.com, or you can link to it from my website, rodcdavis.com. John and Diane, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and I'm sure that we're going to be having more of these conversations. Thank you for taking the time, and I will be seeing you again soon.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Rod C. Davis, John Nowinski, and Diane Bearinas saying goodnight from Stratford, Connecticut.